Hello, this is Caroline, and welcome to another episode of the Say Less Pod. I'm your host, Caroline, and yes, this episode was originally supposed to go out, actually, on Mother's Day, but it's okay, because it kind of gave me, like, more time to prepare for this specific topic. So, this is going to be a wild ride, and I know that as of right now, we've kind of been talking more about not like, some of them have been not so great topics. You know, we're trying to kind of just, or I'm trying to figure out, like, okay, what's going to be the best option? Because my brain is more of like an eclectic type of mentality where it's like I don't just focus on one thing. I'm like, okay, I can talk about this and I can talk about this. So this is going to be more of like a true crime episode. But with this, there has been a lot more developments that have come up about this particular topic. So I am just going to start off with that. And we'll kind of just jump right into it. So it's basically about like the Michael Miller case. If you are not familiar with it, I would definitely encourage you to follow along. But basically, it is a case about like spiritual manipulation and kind of the understanding of respect, understanding how things can go crazy and awry in specific churches or even like denominations. And while I don't think it's necessarily a denomination nor review with this specifically, I do think that we need to be aware that certain techniques, certain tactics are evident. And it's not a way of like being afraid of what is involved in the church. A lot of times people will be hearing different things about this, and I know that this probably is going to be a controversial episode, and it's just going to be full of a lot of hot takes, but this is a very interesting case, and it's kind of even caused me to like delve more into it. So what we do know is Micah Miller on like April 27th, I think, is when they found her body. And then the pastor, J.P. Miller, he actually depending on how who you ask. Yes, he did perform a sermon, but he had a sermon the day after her funeral, and it was very odd the way that he had placed it, like, hey, you know, my wife died, we still want you to come to church, we still want you to be involved, and everything. To me, it almost seemed like his reaction didn't match the situation, and that was what was a big thing for me just from the very beginning. And I think we see that a lot of times with narcissistic abuse, is sometimes when they should be sad, when they should be, or even like happy emotions, it's like you should be excited. Okay, we saw this even in the case, not that it's necessarily related, but even in the case of Ruby Frankie, there have been studies to show, okay, what could cause somebody to remain that deadpan throughout the whole interrogation? She never once like kind of mentioned her kids. And we kind of see the same thing with J.P. Miller. So also, if you look at some of the text messages that he sent her, and he sent the family. It's so after she had passed, J.P. Miller had actually sent out a text to Micah's parents and even siblings saying, you know what, if you had allowed her to get the help that she needed with the mental health struggles that she had, this wouldn't have happened. So almost like blaming them for what had happened. And another thing is a lot of times in his sermons, he would bring up Micah Miller. And I have unfortunately seen this in the churches where if someone is like struggling with mental health, mental illnesses, sometimes there is this subcategory of people. And I was also listening to another podcast about this, but I have noticed it specifically. There is this individuals who believe that if you're struggling, maybe you didn't believe enough, maybe you didn't pray enough. And if you just pray harder, things will go away, things will get better. That's not necessarily true. And it doesn't mean that you are this evil person because you are trying to seek help, because you are trying to seek therapy. I honestly think that J.P. Miller had a lot of things wrong too, because there had been some people who had tried to call him out before, and he said, hey, you know what, I sign off on your paycheck. And they're like, but I answer to a higher power, which is God. And they're like, yeah, God's not signing off on your paycheck, I am. And there's a lot of times where narcissists also, they have this inflated, like a lot of times we see like that inflated view of self, right? But it's crazy when it's covert narcissism, where you can act like you're doing all these good deeds and publicly you are like this preacher, this stand-up person that has no flaws, that has no issues. And behind the scenes, you are an absolute dirtbag. Trying to keep this episode as PG as I can. I know some of my episodes aren't as PG, so I'm trying to keep this episode as probably PG as I possibly can. Anyway, and I think we need to kind of be aware of that. There is a passage and in the Bible that definitely talks about, there's several passages that say, like, be aware of people in the church, even leaders, especially in Galatians. Now, I will definitely say I have church hurt, and there's something about sometimes like crawling to the altar that maybe people don't necessarily realize. But there is a passage about being aware of wolves who come into the church spreading false doctrines. Don't necessarily know what that is. I think that's in 1 Peter. There's also one in 1 John too. There's one about exposing these individuals. And one of exposing these individuals for the lies that they have. And, you know, the truth, they say the truth will find you out. I know, I'm pretty sure that's in Leviticus, but I do know that there's several passages in the New Testament. And even if you want to go Old Testament, there are passages that talk about some not so great people, okay? Now, like I say, I'm not like the most, like, Instagram Christian. Like, I don't have it all together. I don't know my Bible front and back and sideways and upside down. Some people do. Okay. But I know a lot of things can kind of slip under the radar, especially with pastors, because they are in authority. There have been times, even in my church, my childhood church that I grew up in, and I'm not going to go through all of this, but where I would question someone's authority. And if you flinched, that means that you fear the person, and therefore that meant respect. That's not respect, that's fear. And if people don't know the difference, I think that maybe they're fooling themselves. And like, it's like, oh, well, we need to put the fear of God in people. And so I came to think, like, the fear of God is always a negative thing. That if you have the fear of God, you should also have the fear of man. Because you don't know what's going to happen. Also, it's difficult too when you, so a lot of the things that J.P. Miller also said, and this is like a sad, sad truth, were misogynistic. Like, he would be hyping up other people's wives from the pulpit, like complete gassing them up, like being like, oh, I don't know how, like, so-and-so could be with this person because he's not that attractive. And it's like, some things, like, you just shouldn't say. And there were sometimes I want to believe people are these good, wholesome people. They just tend to put, like, their foot in their mouth or shoot themselves in the foot. Because, but there's some people I don't think that you're a dude just that sometimes says dumb things. I think you are a dude that is truly a red flag. With the way that you view women, and even with passages, you would take them to the extreme of being like, well, I know that God wrote this for women because it says that women are not supposed to speak. Women aren't supposed to have a voice. And that's a difficult place to be, okay? Especially if you disagree with someone in authority and you don't feel like you can go up to them, because that's not being respectful. That's not respecting authority. I was constantly told I didn't know how to respect authority because sometimes I didn't agree with what the person was saying, and it's like, oh, you're just being convicted. There's a difference between conviction and condemnation as well. And with all of this that happened, I feel like he was probably like holding the water on so many people and holding them down. And like, there are two different things that I wanted to also address. Like, me and one of my friends, we were having, like, this discussion about the Michael Miller case. And she asked, like, how could people go week after week and listen to his sermons knowing that he's not this great of a guy? I know this is a dating term, but in a lot of ways, I feel like he was breadcrumbing the congregation, giving them something to hold onto, and coming back week for week, just to keep them satisfied. But it wasn't necessarily anything of substance. But people thought, okay, maybe he's the pastor. He wouldn't lead us astray. he knows what he's doing. And Christian gaslighting is a thing, okay? And Christian gaslighting is way different than, like, what anybody might expect it to be or have experienced, because they will also take a scripture and take it way out of context and go out of pocket with it, what they think, what they believe that it says, and might use that to traumatize someone else. And I've seen people do this with domestic violence, like turning the other cheek. Okay, that's advocacy for domestic violence, okay? Or like even with abusive situations, people are taught to stay because they need to be submissive to their husband, and that is the best way that you can obey your husband. If you think submission and obedience are equal to each other, we can have a conversation. I do think that you have to be willing to hear the other person out and know what they think, know what they believe. But it's a lot difficult. It's a lot more difficult to call it out. Especially in those different settings, because you don't think that you have a voice. And, you know, it says right here that you don't. Or another thing, too, is, and I'm not saying this is all pastors, so don't hear that, but something that I have noticed is because they have like a seminary degree, they think that they probably know more than the congregation, and in a way, you know, they do. Because I have a psychology degree, I may know some more about the mental health field than someone who doesn't, but that doesn't mean that I shame those people for not having those credentials. But do I have as much knowledge as I would want to? No. And I'm trying to still learn that. I think the problem with J.P. Miller and pastors who think because they got this degree that they have something going for them, and then they look at everybody else down below, that is a true, like, narcissist too. Like, it's like where you feel like you're on top of the world, but you're drowning everybody else out. And you're holding them under the water. People's like, I helped you. No, you didn't. And sometimes it's just maybe like context, baby context, and we just need to explain our definitions with things. I think sometimes that may be the case. And also, it is very difficult for like people who have been in those situations, who've been in domestic violence situations, to first of all come forward, and second of all, like, the statistics on people who've just been like emotionally abused versus people who've been physically abused and emotionally abused, the people who've been emotionally abused don't really feel like they can, like, strictly just emotionally abused, don't feel like they can come forward as often, because in some ways, and this is not true at all, you're still going to deal with the trauma, but they feel because they don't have any scars that their pain doesn't exist. And how are you supposed to tell someone that, hey, the abuse was mental more so than anything else? Yes, they might have broke dishes around you, but they never actually hit you. And I also, here's another thing. If people come to you and they're coming to you from a place of understanding and they want to actually talk with you, I guess, about some things, hear them out and get them the help that they need. Okay, I'm gonna explain that because that literally didn't make any sense. So with Micah Miller, this was placed in JP's sermon that, hey, she's, you know, it was, okay, so first of all, I will get into that too. With her mental health struggles, he would constantly bring up, he brought up in one of his sermons, hey, you hurt me. That's not the way to go about it. You know, I never hear a man say that. And I feel like the ladies could learn from this and this. Okay, that is your person. And then he also, I don't know if it was the same sermon or a different sermon, but he mentioned, oh, I'm just going to pray for a hot wife next time. And it's like, I don't think that people realize how hurtful that is and how damaging that is to your self-worth and self-character. And then people wonder why, like, women, sometimes even in the church, grow up with such a negative self-talk. And yes, it is sometimes from society, sometimes from family, but also this place where, you know, they may be use of Bible verse to tell you, like, you're weak or that you're not as, you know, whatever the case may be. I mean, there's some pretty petty things, but there's also some deeper issues that need to be solved and need to be saved. But going back to, like, the you hurt me, like, that shouldn't be in someone's vocabulary. To a certain degree, yes, does just saying that alone help fix the issue? No. Okay. But a lot of things are never changed with a closed mouth. And I truly, truly believe this. So sometimes you have to tell, like, your partner, okay, your person that you're in a relationship with, hey, you know what? When you leave me on red for X amount of time, it does this with my mind, and I can't help it. I think that you don't love me anymore. I think that you don't trust me. Be aware and acknowledge those feelings. A true, like, man, whatever, they're going to understand, okay, this person has expressed something to me, and I'm willing to fix the issue. So, yes, to saying you hurt me, no, that doesn't change anything. If you give them concrete evidence and you actually let them know the receipts, that might help with resolve the issue. But hey, I've also been in the situation where, you know, someone, like, leaves you on red and you're forced to fill in those gaps of what did I do? What could I have done? You won't even talk to me. You're giving me this cold shoulder. So, yes, to saying you hurt me change anything? No, it surely doesn't. But you can probably bring a resolution better with actually giving some of those concrete tools. So that's for one. And also, if you're interested in, like,
like with women, like teaching and talking in the church, like I don't necessarily have a problem with that. That's just me. Okay. So also going out of like the Christian gaslighting, like maybe feeling like, okay, I'm not worthy, I'm not worth it. Mental health struggles are also a big deal in the church, and I really kind of touched on this. I have found more peace, more guidance from the people that come alongside of me and not necessarily tell me everything's going to be okay, but or at least, because in some ways, I think that they had seen some red flags with J.P. Miller, and they were telling Micah, maybe get out of this situation before it's too late. I don't know. I do know J.P., because he mentioned this, he went through her phone and discovered that she had been talking with some different people, and they were saying, hey, you know what? And he was like, don't be talking bad about your husband. That's, and I don't think he even like mentioned it that way. Yeah, it's like I say, sometimes he had an very interesting approach with how he related to things, which, like I say, makes me think that, yes, I truly believe that he had NPD, which is narcissistic personality disorder, because he has a lot of the symptoms that kind of identify with that. He would also, okay, so there were a lot of things, too, that he would put in his sermons that I thought were public confessions of admittance, if that makes sense. So, like, one time he was like, oh, yeah, sometimes you get so mad at people, you just want to, like, hit them with your car, something to that effect. And turns out, if you look at public records, he actually had done that with, someone. So it's like, and a lot of times there were brief pauses, and but I feel like that's why it was very easy for one, like, because he was a pastor, because he had status to fly under the radar like he did. Even though these claims had come out about him, because he was, like, Micah's youth pastor, too, which just throws another, like, wrench into, like, the field. Because apparently they had met when Micah was, like, 14. And then I think he was like maybe 28 when they met. And he also mentioned something about like women, you know, they have false doctrines, they have gossip, they do. And it's like, that is some women, but you can't like broad stroke for one. But then also in that same breath, almost, he mentioned, like, okay, but men, women are emotional. Men, we just hit something and then we get over it. And it's like, okay, so in some ways, you almost confessed to domestic violence. Everything is right there in plain sight. But hey, because it's like, and you know, you can kind of say, oh, it's just a joke. This is being sexist, being misogynistic should never be a joke. And because a lot of times it's like, who's laughing? And I do know who's laughing. But it's the people who maybe have never broken, or maybe because they feel like they have to laugh. So another thing too is when, on the day that she had died, a lot of times they were saying that he was making the memorial sermon about him. And I will say, like, it almost seemed like, I couldn't really tell if he was laughing or crying with half of the things. I'm like, I feel like you should be crying because your wife died. But also, I can't really tell if you're laughing about this whole thing and just kind of like making fun of it. Sounds like you're doing that too, a little bit. But like a couple days before, like back up, a couple days before she had actually passed away, he had wrote this email saying, hey, you know what? I'm sorry that I did, like, I'm sorry that I slashed your tires, I'm sorry that I did this. And he, like, wrote this whole letter confessing to pretty much every single thing that he had done. And that is breadcrumbing as well. Like, it's, like, in a little bit. Like, saying, okay, I'm sorry I did all these things. Please take me back. I'm sorry I messed up. I'm not that good of a person, okay? And he was like, oh, yeah, it was just my fleshly desires. I'm so sorry, baby. Like, dude, you can't blame things on your flesh and expect to get away with it. And even, okay, so this is why I love David Kushner's music, because it's like, it depicts it so real. It's like, David Kushner is a Christian, but I feel like he's probably dealt with a lot of like churchhood himself, and he's like coming back. The song Burn and also the song Daylight, would definitely encourage you to listen to them. But one of the things that the Daylight says, and it sometimes in a lot of ways it helps me to, like, his music just helps me to like memorize or like see things a little bit differently. I don't know if that makes probably any sense, because music is basically my therapy. So, but it's like, okay, all of our sins being exposed, and it's like, we're hiding everything from the daylight, or from this light of that's going to shine bright on all of our flaws, all of our weaknesses. Also, like, Burn is about like these people who are in the church, and you know, for whatever reason, it's like they are not actually healthy individuals in the church. They are toxic, and you know, sometimes they're like, oh, I was trying to help you, I was being the better person. But in all honesty, like, the whole thing is this, like, you watch me burn, and then it's like, you the part in the thing is like, you're not a prophet, have you forgotten that you're godless? But anyway, I say all that to kind of reroute back to he was a person who had all this like faith background, but he was not biblical. Nor, and if he was, we he probably was reading the JP version of, like, the Bible. Just saying. Your fleshly desires are going to cause you to stumble in a lot of different areas. And a lot of times we want to, like, you know, I remember, and I don't do this anymore, but when I wasn't as, like, emotionally mature, okay? And so I would say things like, oh, yeah, you know what? It's just flesh that's, like, causing me to do this. I promise I'll never do it again. That is a now that is something a narcissist would say. Okay. And a narcissist doesn't necessarily care how they treat other people. Some of the things that JP did, also if you are listening with, like, children, he would have his wife, Micah Miller, have, like, sex acts and watch other people have sex acts. And it's just like, I don't understand how, like, it's like, take out ethics out of the picture. I just don't understand how you could watch someone, especially someone you claim to love, like, watch them in that position. Like, I don't understand it. Hey, it's not for me. No judgment, though. It's like, it just couldn't be me. I do also want to let you know that sometimes, however, we cast out the baby with the bathwater, and yeah, this bathwater is disgusting, like, all the different things, like, if you look now, there's actually evidence that, hey, maybe on this 911 call, it wasn't actually Micah Miller who made that 911 call saying that she was going to unalive herself. JP Miller's, so his name's John Paul. I think I've been saying JP the whole time. JP Miller's lawyer actually specialized in AI, and JP even mentioned that in his sermon that Micah was terrified of AI, which is a very odd thing to mention. On the day of her funeral, JP was like, yeah, I had a lot to do. I had to go to the mall and fix my dog tag. Which just seems like you have your priorities all messed up, right? That's another thing. And then, so also, like, before they did the cremation of Micah Miller, I don't know if they did an autopsy specifically, but they did do, like, a investigation. The church is completely closed. I tried to go onto the website. It's like, this account has been suspended, which, okay. And so there's just a lot going on with that. But they found, like, bruises on her arm, and almost like it was her arm was being forced upward. So here's just my whole thing. Okay, so I don't necessarily know, because Micah had also, like, kept this binder of sorts of every kind of, like, receipt, basically, that JP Miller had ever done. She did also tell her family, hey, if I ever come home and I have a GSW, which that's what happened, she had a GSW to the head, know that JP did it. And I know he's going to frame me and look like I committed suicide. I just know it. That was her own words, okay? But when the father heard the 911 call, he thought it did not sound like Micah Miller. And I feel like, now, I'm not a parent, but there has to be, like, probably, I know there's mother's intuition. I don't know if there's, like, parent intuition or you just feel like something's off where they think that it was AI. Especially if it seems like her hand was forced upward, it makes me think, okay, that's why his dog tag was, like, chain was broken. Because she was trying to grab it in a point of desperation. In that point of struggle, all she could grab onto was his necklace. And so it snapped and broke. And then with the whole hand movement, he was trying to, that was like where he was trying to make this GSW look like it was a suicide attempt. That's, and if you know, like, anything, I'm about, like, domestic violence, the gaslighting is so real that you almost gaslight yourself into thinking, okay, maybe he's changed, maybe he's different. At this particular point, she knew nothing was going to change. Okay. Now, like, more details are coming out on this, so we don't have all of the different information, but some people have compared it to the Chris Watts case, which I will have to do more research on that. The Chris Watts, though, yes, they're both evil, vile people, but it seems like there was a lot more with the Chris Watts case as well that went on, and because I don't feel like going into that in this episode. But yeah, I'm going to have to do more research on that too. So also, like, casting out the good with the bad. This church is like a horrendous, and I can't say like everybody in the church. I wish that when Micah Miller had come forward in that specific church that heads would turn, or maybe somebody would say, oh yeah, we noticed some things were going on. I wish that I didn't have to take this drastic of a turn, but unfortunately, and this is just my personal thought, I think that there's going to be a lot more Micah Millers that are going to come outside of churches, and we're going to see the downplay. Because, you know, I just truly believe there's going to be a lot more cases that are going to come out. And hopefully it doesn't get to the point of Micah Miller and it have this end to the movie. You know, so with churches, just in general, like, be on your guard and be, like, aware of your surroundings. If you notice some red flags, they're probably there, okay?
one of my friends, the best advice that she ever gave me was, because I was like, dude, I don't know how to put my finger on about, and this wasn't necessarily a church, this was a person who was inside of a church, and I was like, I don't know how to put my finger on it, I just feel like this person's not a good dude, and have I seen a lot of his red flags? Not particularly, but he happens to be the pastor. And, like, I could not understand any of it. And she actually told me, she was like, if something feels off, Caroline, chances are there is something off about this person, about this church. If something feels off, it typically is. And I would just say, like, intuitiveness is a skill, and in the churches they call it discernment, but being intuitive, understanding red flags, and knowing who you can trust with that information has got to be the most difficult task at all, of all, because you sometimes you feel like you're caged and you have nowhere to turn. So it's definitely hard to figure out, okay, who are the people that you can trust with this? And who are the people that you need to flee? Like I said, there's a lot of church hurt that I have, and a lot of people didn't really notice it, and for a while I felt like agitated. I still sometimes don't feel like I belong in the church, because mainly I was just always invisible, I was always there. And I will definitely say, like, church is not necessarily for everybody. If you are, like, faith-based, if you are a Christian, like, go off. Like, I don't have any problems against that. But it is difficult. It's... Like, in psychology, I learned that people who have a faith background or spiritual background tend to fare better in life because they have something maybe that they can turn to when times are rough. Even if it's not necessarily, like, a strictly Christian background. And so sometimes, you know, I have friends from different walks of life, different backgrounds, different belief systems, and there's part of me that kind of understands where they're coming from with that. There's a huge part of me that understands where they're coming from with that. And I would say it's easy to kind of remain desensitized and to feel maybe like no one's on your side because, hey, you were drowning and no one even thought to unplug the water that was killing you. You know, it's easy to be angry at those people. It's easy to store up like the heartbreak and the pain. And even like, let's say you were younger. I'm, like, really, really sorry if any of this, like, happened to you to any extent. Like, I really hope it wasn't to any extent of, like, what I was talking about, like, for most of this episode, like, domestic violence or anything. But if you've experienced church trauma to any extent, I would definitely encourage you to seek out therapy, okay? And I know therapy is not for everyone, but, or seek out, like, someone who you can just talk to. Maybe they've gone through some similar situations like you have. And so they know what it's like. They know what it's like to question. They know what it's like to be doubtful. Because doubting does, and questioning does not mean that you're being disrespectful. And sometimes it's difficult to know the direction to take. Even as I was, like, thinking about, like, how I wanted to go about this episode, there were a lot of things that were kind of going through my mind, and even, like, the pain was all there, and things started to come up. But I gotta remind myself, first of all, not everybody is that way. Just because you've had experiences with some people in your church, doesn't mean that everybody is going to be that way. It's kind of if you go to, like, a doctor, and one of the doctors is, like, medically gaslighting you and telling you, oh yeah, it's all in your head, you know what, you don't actually have a broken leg, you must be dreaming it, or no, it doesn't hurt that bad, like, come on, doesn't mean that every doctor is that way. Just because you've had a bad experience, like, I know even, like, lawyers, they get this bad rep for, like, being sharks and, like, you know, trying to manipulate people. You may have a really good lawyer one day who helps you out of some things. There are some crooked lawyers. JP's lawyer is one of them. There's several, I mean, we can talk about cases with crooked lawyers. There's several crooked lawyers. Doesn't mean all of them are that way. Might just take you some time to find a good one. And a lot of times I used to cast out the good with the bad. And sometimes the good and the bad can exist simultaneously. You can have a good relationship with someone. Doesn't mean some of the things that they said, some of the things that they did don't hurt. And I have to, like, actually remind myself that even though this person comes out of such and such a church, like, let's say you grew up, because I've had friends that they kind of grew up in maybe strict churches or legalistic churches, and we could go into all of that, what that necessarily means, but then anytime that something resembles something, they're almost scared that it's going to happen again, or it's, you know, scared that that person is going to say something again. And I will say, whenever someone even invites me to a church, I'm always looking for the exit signs. It's just, it feels safer. Yeah, I'm okay if people greet me in the church, but don't like, give me a like surprise hug. I just don't like those. That's like another story for another time. But I've had some friends, or not friends, I've had some people who have reached out to me like via social media recently, and some of these people have come from my old church. Some of them, you know, are not like, some of these people that have reached out, they have no connection with like the church trauma, like not specifically. Yes, they are related to that church, but they didn't necessarily cause the church trauma. And so I'm not going to necessarily label them and cast them aside as being like, oh yeah, you came from this church, now I can't talk to you. No, because it's like they didn't do it. They're not the bad ones. Do I know that everybody's intention is going to be wholesome and good? No. That's why I would say to be aware and set up a line, okay? Set up a boundary. But, and I'm very cautious with it when I say this, don't set up a wall. I know some people, they set up a line and they're like, oh, I'm just protecting my heart. Good, go off. Like, go off, queen. Like, just do your thing. But don't, like, set up walls, because then you're preventing anybody from ever getting in. And that's not the way that we want to, or that's not the way you should be living. Yes, you want to protect yourself and protect yourself from the harm. But if you don't allow yourself to feel certain things, you never experience the beauty. There are some emotions that aren't necessarily bad. And I don't believe that any emotion is bad. It's all about how you handle it. You are responsible for your reaction and not theirs. And sometimes people want you to believe that, okay, if you had 90% to do with this, you are responsible for the whole 100%. No, you're responsible for that 90%. You're not responsible for their 10%. Or if you have less, you're not, like if you only had 25%, you're not responsible for their 75%, so forth, whatever. So I would encourage you not to necessarily cast out the good and the bad, good with the bad. Also, part of the whole Micah Miller case is there wasn't enough accountability. I feel like, yes, this person had elders or deacons, and it was actually an elder who required JP to step down from his position of authority. But my understanding is that elders and deacons are actually supposed to be the support system, and to call the pastor out on their shit. Like, it's like a lot of people, I don't think, do that enough. They're afraid to. Because, for one, they are the pastor. They do have authority. And you shouldn't be afraid that you're going to lose your job.
for like standing up. But also, there should have been some system in place, some systems to safeguard, because I didn't even touch on a lot of other things that JP did. You know, he had a criminal background. And no, I'm not saying that that should negate you from being a pastor, but it should be on the radar. Especially, now, I'm one of those people that if you had something on your record, because he also had an SO charge or a sexual offender charge, several of those. Well, I think, no, he was registered as one. Yeah. So, I don't know if, like, someone who has been, like, registered as a sexual offender should have a position of authority in the church. Because you are leading other individuals. And maybe, like, you're... A lot of times he thought that he was better than other individuals. Even though, like, it was like, divorce is wrong. And it's like, yes, but you've been divorced a couple of times. And I'm not saying, hey, you know what, that's awful, that's sin. Okay, what's the reasoning behind all of these? How often did these occurrences happen? Okay, with, like, the sexual offender charges, how often did they happen? And if they, like, when they did, like, just, you know, like I say, he even had that charge for running someone over with his car. So these things are done in spite, and just because you have maybe this passage or this verse to back you up doesn't mean that you're in the right. But if people could call them out respectfully, of course, you can respectfully disagree with someone. But if someone was willing to call him out, if someone was willing to protect Micah and protect these women, these girls, because if it's actually true, he groomed Micah. How many more were there? Sorry, I kind of blanked. So, how many more were there that could have been protected? You know, and that is what is hard about the whole thing. So creating safe churches, not creating a perfect church, but creating a safe church where people can go to and feel heard, feel seen. Because, yes, I think that you should keep your relationship on private to a certain extent. But at some point, you have to tell people, like, what's truly going on. And there's a difference between talking bad about someone and just telling about the different things that they are doing. There's a difference between judgment and asking for advice. Sometimes people's like, well, don't vent. We're not supposed to vent to others. I would agree with that. Okay, because I do know people that, you know, talk bad about other people. (Clears throat) So I'm not saying, suggesting that we do that. But if there is something that's going on and you have like full on receipts of what this person has done, yes, allowing that to be known and actually being taken seriously, like with the church. You know, we have, well, most churches, they have like a board of directors and I was going to say a missions team. Wow. They have a board of directors and then they also have like higher standings. It's not necessarily like, I kind of was thinking of it as a hierarchy. They're kind of not so much of a hierarchy specifically. But first of all, we need to understand like the detriment to the situation, okay? How can we prevent this from happening again? How can we stop it? And like I say, I think that that comes with knowing the right people to speak to. If you are a kid, a lot of times you're told to go to an adult in the room. I would say that's not always the case because some of the adults, this is probably going to be a controversial, like a hot take. I'm so sorry. Not all adults need to be respected, okay? There, I said it. This is, you know, say less. For a reason. There were some people that have, like, the intent to harm. And it takes a while to find those people, like I say, that you can actually trust, okay? But if you do find someone that you can be completely honest with, there's no judgment. Don't ever let that go. Also, fun fact about the other, like, church that I never, and, like, you know, I mean, there's a lot, like, with the childhood church, too, but with that one church that I told my friend, hey, something just feels off about this pastor, I couldn't really place my finger on it. He's no longer at the church. And they would have like actual meetings and they're like, oh yeah, we can't have this person involved in the meetings. And I'm like, he's the pastor. Why wouldn't he be involved in like the church meetings? And I had the suspicion that, you know, something was going on. And that's why they couldn't have him in the meetings. Well, that's what I was always, like, thinking. And then, now that he no longer works at the church, I'm just like, oh, okay. Because one of my friends actually told me about that. They're like, you know that guy you never trusted? He no longer works there. I'm like, okay, well. So, sometimes just entrusting, like, your intuitive nature and understanding the red flags are going to a lot of times help you out with certain things. And I don't think that anybody can tell you that that's wrong. Some people are going to try.
tell you, hey, maybe you shouldn't be feeling this way. They haven't given you any reason to do that, but they haven't given me any reason to trust them.
Okay, so anyway, I hope that you enjoyed this episode. This was, it's 1 hour and 10 minutes right now, but until next time, I hope that you have a great rest of your day, and welcome to the Say Less Podcast.